if I had any one piece of what I believe is very good advice for anyone that's a part of the community that you are building and growing, is
welcome to Afrolingual Abroad, the podcast dedicated to empowering educators of color to expand their horizons through language learning and international travel. I'm your host, Anthony Hurd, and today we have a remarkable guest who truly embodies this mission. She's an educator, author, and co-owner of Tumbao Bilingual Books, with a powerful approach that blends wellness with professional development for adult learners. Through her journey as a bilingual classroom teacher, instructional coach, administrator, and even an ultramarathoner, she has enriched not only her own life, but also the lives of countless educators she supports. Please join me in welcoming Valerie Butron.
Saludos! Thank you so much for having me. Hola, ¿qué tal?
Todo bien, gracias. Sí.
Bien. Bien, gracias. Sí, ando bien.
Ahora tengo que pensar en español.
Ah, sí.
No voy a hablar en francés.
Especialmente, como ya dije, tienes el cerebro multilingüe con francés, español e inglés. Yo nomás con el cerebro bilingüe. Bilingüe. Bueno, la verdad es que sí hablo un poco de catalán. Pero diría que mi cerebro es bilingüe, español e inglés.
Está bien, está bien. ¿Piensas que vas a estudiar un otro idioma o...?
Bueno, por el momento estoy tan ocupada que realmente en estos momentos no tengo la capacidad, pero a lo mejor en el futuro.
Okay, let's get into it. So, can you start by just sharing a little bit about your journey? What inspired you to blend wellness with professional development, especially for adult educators?
Yes, oh, so absolutely. I think one of the things that I always go back to in talking about this idea of wellness being blended with, frankly, anything, but certainly for purposes of this part of our conversation with professional development for teachers, for educators, is when we think about the very human interactions that are involved in teaching and learning in classrooms all over the United States and certainly all over the world, it's these human interactions that they provide a lot of compassion, satisfaction. That's why so many of us are drawn to education and to teaching and learning. But they also, that same work, if we're not balancing it with our own relationship with ourselves and our wellness, it can oftentimes lead to compassion fatigue and burnout. And secondary vicarious trauma, right? And so I think that I'm very excited by what I've seen over the last several years and has really sped up exponentially in the last couple of years of this recognition systemically that wellness is not a separate part of an educator's journey, that it has to be a component that is in the center of what it means to be a continuously learning, growing teacher, that you have to also have a focus on your own wellness journey. It starts within. And I truly believe that wellness does start within, and that the relationships that you'll have with your students, with your colleagues, with the parents of your students and caregivers of your students, all of those relationships will be positively impacted by you improving the relationship that you have with yourself and your own physical, mental, spiritual well-being.
Ooh, amen. Yes. that's so true. You know, as you were speaking, I was just reflecting on the time that I was teaching in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And I was really fortunate that our school gave us, I think it was 2 or 3 additional wellness days in addition to our sick days, which I know that some schools don't do that. So I feel really blessed that I was like in a school that actually gave us wellness days. But that is so important. That's so needed for educators, because I think a lot of people who aren't in the profession thinks that all that we do is just teach kids. But it's really like we wear a lot of hats. You know, we're the mentor, we're the counselor, we're the support system. Well, we're all of these things first, right? The coach, the support, all these things. And then we're the teacher. because we have to wear a lot of hats when you're dealing with kids. They have a lot of needs that goes beyond just academics, right?
Absolutely. And you can't give as an educator, as a teacher, you cannot give what you don't have.
Exactly.
So if you don't have first the empathy for yourself, if you haven't created some habits and routines that are just embedded in the way you lead your life, mm-hmm. to care for yourself, then you're not well positioned to wear all of those hats that you refer to. Because from my vantage point, I don't see on the horizon the level of needs of students changing. I don't see that somehow, in a couple of years, students are going to be arriving in schools with fewer needs. They're right. going to continue to have, because of the nature of the way that our world is moving, those needs are not going anywhere. Those needs to have a safe place, to have a trusting relationship, to be able to maybe fill in some of the gaps that are existing in some of our students' lives for a variety of reasons. That, frankly, is a much bigger conversation. But for purposes of thinking about you're a teacher or someone who's aspiring to be a teacher, you know that there's these needs that your students are going to arrive to your classroom with. Mm-hmm. And so if you know that you are called to this profession, you have to also acknowledge that there may be some self-work and some wellness work that you need to do with yourself in order to be well positioned to be a teacher that can help your students with all of these needs that you know they're going to come with.
Oh, certainly. And I think something that you mentioned that was key was teachers realizing that they have to also do work on themselves to be the best version that they can be for teachers. So I'm wondering for you, what type of wellness practices have you found that really resonate most with educators and your work with helping teachers, whether it be like prioritizing self-care or something else, because we all know that teachers, it's a very demanding role.
Absolutely.
So what kind of things do you help them with?
Well, recently, one of the workshops that has been very well received has been on helping teachers identify areas of self-talk that they may be engaging in, the way they talk to themselves, and how that impacts their relationship with how they view themselves and how they view their students, and frankly, everyone that they interact with. So that workshop in particular, it's been really interesting because sometimes we don't realize the types of ways that we talk to ourselves, that sometimes we have these patterns of how we think about things. And we don't always realize that the way we choose to think about things mm-hmm. then translates into us acting in certain ways that then leads to certain outcomes sometimes. And we don't realize that much of the time those outcomes, you can draw a line from the way we thought about a situation that occurred, that the way we chose to think about it then led to certain behaviors that led to an outcome. So I really enjoyed giving that workshop because it's just having that space to be like, wow, there are these ways that I talk to myself that if I could be more aware of them, then when these things happen, it's not a matter of if something is going to happen. It's when those things happen that maybe trigger us, that we are in a better position to stop that pattern of thinking that we know, leads to a less than desirable outcome, and we can choose to think differently.
So the self-talk has been great. This is something that's actually something that my therapist told me about, which is funny. To just be mindful of what I say to myself and what I say that is true and what is not true. That is something that my therapist told me about. And when she said that, I was like, oh, well, what am I saying to myself? What am I putting limitations on that shouldn't be there? Or what am I doing some type of like self-sabotage by my words that I should stop doing that I might not be very cognizant of in knowing?
It's powerful. So in that workshop, really it sounds something I'm finding in general with my experience with designing and just leading professional development as of late is that less is more. Sometimes it's not about having five different learning outcomes that we're going to have in this PD session when folks are already oftentimes feeling overwhelmed. It's about what is the one thing that I would like to center this time together, this professional learning experience around, so that when you leave, I believe that you should leave feeling refreshed and reinvigorated and feel like the professional development, not only did it help you with thinking about a specific teaching strategy, but it also reached your heart and your spirit, because there's so much heart that is involved in teaching.
Oh, yeah.
In good teaching. And so good professional development should honor and recognize that and should intentionally try and reinvigorate both the mind and the heart and spirit, because we know that both are elements of good teaching. So then good professional development should mirror that. Professional development, from my vantage point, it exists to serve the teachers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so as we have seen society change, as we have seen the needs of our communities and our students change, then obviously the way that we approach professional development and staff trainings for teachers, it needs to change as well. And it needs to honor those changes and provide spaces for teachers to not just talk about, you know, guided small group reading instruction, or, you know, how to do a lesson plan. We should also have space for how do we keep ourselves charged and refreshed.
Definitely a big part. I do see the parallel between being your best self, to show up for yourself and then for kids, because in my experience, kids do drain you. They do kind of suck the life out of you. And for me, I'm a person who's very extroverted, very like over the top, and I give a lot of energy. I give. And sometimes at the end of the day, I'm drained. I'm like, I gave it all today to the kids. I have no more. And sometimes not even enough for myself at the end of the day. You know, I go home and I'm like, whew, okay. You know, at least the kids are happy, but like, what about me? So that's important.
And over time, so here's the thing. And I've noticed a shift. It used to almost be sort of like bragging rights among teachers as to who was the most sleep deprived, who stayed up the latest grading, you know, who was in the building the earliest doing some amazing bulletin board. And it was like almost like who could drain themselves the most.
Used to be a competition.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I experienced that earlier in my career. I'm very heartened and frankly encouraged by the shift that I'm noticing, where that's no longer the case universally. I can speak with some experience on this, because in addition to providing professional development for teachers, I also provide professional development for administrators, because I'm a former administrator. And administrators are starting to notice that an emerging generation of teachers now is much better positioned. They are doing a much better job of vocalizing their boundaries to administrators. They're doing a much better job of vocalizing their boundaries, not just to administrators, but to parents and families, and letting them know what those boundaries are. And they're communicating it in such a way where it's not coming off as though they don't want to do their job. It's saying, I want to be in this profession for the long haul, for the long term. And so in order for me to do that, I cannot operate at a deficit. Because what you just described to me about how, like, you know, sometimes you just give to your students, and you come home and you realize, like, you don't even have all that to give. Now your account is in negative. And you cannot be in education long term. Well, you could. Now here's the thing. You could be in education long term with a deficit in your account, but what's gonna happen is you're going to end up with health consequences. Mental health, physical health, you are going to face those repercussions, as well as you're not going to be as good of a teacher or as good of a colleague, you know. So you cannot long-term, you cannot sustain that where you are long-term always taking more, allowing people to make withdrawals from your account that's in the negative. Like, just like trying to go to the bank and take a, you know, fill out a withdrawal. And it's like, I'm sorry, sir. Like, your checking account is
Now you're in debt.
You're overdrawn, and yet you're still trying to, oh, I'll sign up for that committee. Oh, yes, I'm going to respond to this parent who just emailed me at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I need to respond to them right away. Like all those little pieces.
Ooh, that makes me think that like the bank analogy makes me think that you go to the bank and you're trying to take out something, like you're trying to give more energy but that you don't have. And when you're in debt, that means that you owe money. So this could mean, in with your example, that you kind of owe yourself energy or time back, or you owe yourself some self-care.
You might need to take a sabbatical.
You got it.
Right? No, but so, and so as we realize, not everybody necessarily has the circumstances where they could take that sabbatical. So it's about being proactive. Let's not wait until you're at the brink of burning out and leaving the profession entirely, or, you know, just doing, and honestly, frankly, doing harm to kids by no longer responding to them in ways that, you know, are not really serving them, right? Let's not wait until that happens. Let's be proactive and have some preventative things in place. So a lot of the professional development that I enjoy doing is about helping teachers rethink some of their habits and their routines. And sometimes it can be, you know, sometimes it's small changes that when they are done over time, kind of like, since we're talking about banking and finances, it's kind of like this idea of almost compounding interest. Wow. So when you make these little deposits into yourself over time, when you start to talk to yourself in ways that are more soothing, that are encouraging, that are loving, you just do it a little bit over time, but you do it consistently over time. You've now built up that account so that when life starts lifing and situations start situationing, you are better positioned to be able to handle those heavy withdrawals that might need to come out of your account, because you have been investing. You've been investing all along.
And it adds up, and it adds up. I'm wondering, shifting a little bit into what you do with running, because I do know that you are a ultra marathoner.
Yes.
What is the link between you running, and since we're still on the topic of mental wellness, has that been your outlet? Is this something that you would encourage other people, other educators to do?
Yes, 1,000 times yes. This big old smile on my face. And I'm not a big one for hyperbole, okay? I'm not a big one for hyperbole. And it's not hyperbole when I say that for me, my experience has been that running has really saved my life in that. It has provided for me consistently in ways that no other thing has. My mental health, my physical health, my way of viewing myself and what I'm capable of, my patience. I mean, the training alone, just the training, it has built in me this idea of, I was already resilient before I became a runner, before I really, you know, I was already resilient, but it has just grown my resiliency in ways that I could have never imagined. When you think about the life of many runners, people who run consistently, and especially distance runners, but frankly, all runners, anyone who runs consistently will tell you that there are so many runs that they didn't feel like doing. In fact, most of the times I run, I didn't feel like doing it. I didn't feel like, and what running has, we could do an entire long conversation on running. And here's what I do want to say. One of the many jewels that I have gotten from my journey as a runner has been this sort of just consistent effort over time, regardless of how I feel in the moment, yields big results. I literally just ran my fastest ever 5K, 48 hours ago. And it was a result of, Thank you. Thank you. And it was a result of the last several months, actually, since I got back from Ireland in May to do that marathon, I realized that I hadn't been doing something I needed to be doing, which was consistent strength training and cross training. And here's what we do sometimes with ourselves in our life. Sometimes you know the thing that needs to be done. You know that you should do it, but for whatever reason, you choose not to. And sometimes it takes something happening. In my case, it was an injury I sustained after completing the marathon in Ireland. I strained my Achilles tendon. Thankfully, it was just a strain, but it took that happening. I had to take a break from running, and I knew why it happened. It happened because when I was training for the marathon, even though I was logging the miles, I wasn't cross training. That is to say, I wasn't taking regular routine breaks from running and doing like cycling or swimming or lifting weights. And you need to do that. But I chose not to. I chose to be hard-headed. And I was like, oh, no, you know, I was fine. No, I wasn't fine. And I ended up sustaining an injury. So then for the last 5 months, I've consistently been strength training and cross training. And as a result, not only is my Achilles tendon, you know, back to it's all good. But that built me up as a runner. And now I was just able to run at a pace much faster than I'd been able to run before. So what was the point of that? The point of that little story is you already know, anybody who's even listening to this, right? You already know that thing that you need to take action on. And for whatever reason, you're not. And what I would say is you should probably just get out of your own way and go ahead and do the thing.
There it is. Get out your own way. So that's so true. For me, I would say that for me is the gym. For me going to the gym and doing a lot of pushing and strength training is something that I found is my outlet. And when I'm like pushing weights in a way, it's kind of like pushing the pain and like kind of getting it out physically and metaphorically, just away.
Yeah.
And
release it.
Exactly. And I leave feeling amazing. Sometimes, and I have certain playlists. It depends on the mood. Honestly, like I have a workout playlist that's specifically workout songs. And then I have like, I have different ones. I have a motivational playlist that's just like motivational stuff. And then I have like a trap playlist, you know. So it depends on the mood. I might just be feeling like I want to be in a trap way and just, you know, just be in there just throwing up signs and just be like, you know, but still get a good workout. Or yes. I might feel like I want a motivational and a little, you know, keep going. But either way, for me, it really does something for my mental. And when I moved here to Paris, in my first year, because now we're at like almost a year and a half. when I first moved here, I stopped going to the gym because I was still like kind of, you know, getting settled here and finding out different opening a bank account and just different things. So I wasn't working out and I could see how it really took on my mental. It really started to slowly but surely it started to be there. And I was like, oh my gosh, why am I feeling like this? Mm-hmm. What's different? And I realized in talking with myself and my therapist, I'm like, oh, I'm not in the gym anymore. I need to go back. So actually in August, I went back to the gym and it's really been great.
You and I chatted about this a little bit. It was in June about that you were saying you were. So the thing is that your pace and your process is your pace and your process. Mm-hmm. So you were, but you know, what's interesting is you talked about that 2 months before you actually, at least to me. So I don't know how long even before that, but it was something that was on your mind. I think for me, what is starting to really click and be a game changer is I am starting to shorten the length of time that I need to think about something and allow something to marinate before I actually take action on it. Mm. And that is what has caused exponential growth in my life and in my business and all of the things for the last couple of years. The growth has been exponential because I have steadily decreased the amount of time that I need to think about something before actually acting on it.
Oh, I love that.
A game changer for people. It's just, if you could just decrease, I'm not saying don't think before you act, because you do need to think before you act. But from my vantage point, most people spend too long thinking and hardly any time doing. And then when they do start doing, a lot of what they do is dictated by how they feel. I don't feel like, oh, I'm feeling this way. What for me has really changed the game, Anthony, in terms of as an educator, because, you know, I still teach. It's just my students now are adults. As an educator, as an author, as a business owner, what I'm thinking about now is, okay, how much time do I really need to spend thinking about this thing?
Mm.
And also, can I do it while I'm still feeling this way? So I'll give you some concrete examples. Within the last month, even, there have been some really significant things that have happened for us as a company and our growth and some opportunities we've had. And I was doing many of those things while feeling tired, while feeling anxious, while feeling depressed, while feeling you fill in the blank. And I mm-hmm. think what happens is a lot of times people allow those different feelings and emotions, which are valid. Don't get me wrong. They're all valid. But do they have to prevent you from still taking action? Are you able to still honor and have space for that emotion that you have while still making efforts and while still acting towards that future that you want for yourself?
Right, right. That was going to be my next question. And into your book and being an author and the challenges that come with that and how you incorporate your wellness and these type of skills that you've developed over time, how does that translate into Tumbao bilingual books? How does it translate into that? And translate, no pun intended.
Me encanta así como lo traduzco. Lo traduzco con acciones y con disciplina. Esa disciplina lo llevo a la empresa de Tumbao Bilingual Books. Mm. How do I carry that discipline over to Tumbao Bilingual Books? It means that...
Hola, bonjour, and hello. I just want to take a moment to thank you for listening to Afrolingual Abroad. I know you could be doing anything right now, but just know that by tuning in, you're supporting a mission that uplifts Black and Brown communities and empowers us to explore new languages, cultures, and opportunities for a bigger cause. And I cannot thank you enough for your support. Seriously. If you'd like to learn more about me, my journey, and why this work means so much to me, head over to my website at anthonyabroad.com, where you'll find my story, my why, and how we can connect. And if you'd like to support this mission even more, you can buy me a croissant. Or two. J'adore les croissants. Your support helps keep this work going and makes a difference in amplifying our voices and stories worldwide. Find the link in the show notes or in the description down below. Thank you. Together we're changing the narrative, one language and one country at a time. Adios, au revoir, and goodbye. Now let's get back to the episode.
Even if I don't feel like, for whatever reason, I'm feeling I have this certain emotion and I don't feel like sitting down to do some writing right now or to do some editing, I still do it. Mm-hmm. I can allow myself to feel a certain way and have that emotion while I'm still doing the work. Mm-hmm. And I think for me that it's really been as simple as that, as just is making the choice that I'm going to still continue to invest some time right now and give up the need, release, as you say, when you're in the gym, you release. Mm-hmm. I release the need to be perfect. I release the need to have this be the perfect podcast interview. I'm celebrating the fact that we're having the conversation and we're sharing space. I release the need for everyone to have a great opinion about our most recent book that we released, Welcoming Gustavo, because I know that it was on me and my partner, Dr. Guzman, it was on our spirit to put this story about Gustavo into the world. It's not up to us to determine how it's received. Mm-hmm. I just need to stay on my assignment. You see, a lot of times we get distracted by, well, what's this person going to think, or what's the response going to be, or how many people are going to like it, or what, fill in the blank. That's not up to me. And frankly, it's a waste of my energy, my cognitive energy, and my emotional energy to be over here thinking about things that are out of my control. So with growing our bilingual book company and doing the work as an author and editing and all of it, the marketing and selling, I just stay focused on the assignment of continuing to do the work, and the rest will work itself out.
Right.
Running has trained me well in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because you envision the finish line, but it's all of the training that you do on those days that you don't feel like it, where somebody, you know, where there's all these other things happening in your life. And it's like, oh, you could make every excuse to not get your training done. The same could happen with Tumbao bilingual books. I could make all sorts of excuses as to why, you know, why we can't move forward. But because running has taught me that you just consistently put in time, you consistently put in effort, and over time, you will make it across the finish line. You will. The only thing that can cause this to fail is if I give up. And so the only guarantee that I made myself when I entered into this journey with Rita, my partner, I gave myself the guarantee that, because there are no guarantees in business or in life, I just gave myself the guarantee that I'm not going to give up. So I can't control how you respond, how anyone responds, but I do get to control my effort.
I think also I definitely relate to this. I definitely feel this same thing with me and what I'm building with my platform. And I choose to believe that the mission behind what I'm doing and educating and empowering educators of color to learn languages and to travel, that's at the forefront before anything else. And I believe with you and your book and the purpose behind it, that's the mission is first. And that's what's really causing you, the driving force behind you keep going and not listening to the naysayers and the people and the sales and the different things. It's like, you know, you have a purpose. You know that your books they provide something of value to people, and that's bigger than what people have to say about it. And I feel that with what I'm doing. And so I want to know, can you talk about like the start of Tumbao Bilingual Books? What drove you to create this? What is the mission and the passion behind it?
Yes, absolutely. So the mission of Tumbao Bilingual Books is to expand the world of Spanish-English bilingual children's literature to be more inclusive of multi-ethnic and multilingual families. Mm. For me, for my half of the company, it was a very personal, non-linear journey, which frankly, as an African-American, Black American, Spanish bilingual teacher, when I started my career, I felt very isolated on different levels. I felt isolated specifically in the school district I started my career in as a bilingual classroom teacher, because I was one of a very few Black teachers in the district, and I was the only Black bilingual classroom teacher. And that felt isolating at times. I felt like disconnected from the other teachers. And then I also felt a sense of disconnection because I noticed that within the education space, when I was around other bilingual educators, there were frankly, in most, especially in the beginning of my career, most conferences I went to or professional development spaces I went to for bilingual teachers, there were no Black teachers there. And if there were Black teachers there, there was just a couple. And frankly, I've very rarely encountered any that were Black bilingual teachers. The few that were in those spaces were English as a second language teachers. And I oftentimes just felt isolated. So that's one component. The other component is when I myself became a parent and I'm raising an Afro-Latina child. My husband is a first generation Mexican American. And I felt frankly, I felt saddened by the fact that I wasn't able to find books for my own family library. You know, I wanted to have books to read to my daughter where she could kind of see herself and see families that were colorful and represented different ethnic groups. And I wasn't finding that. And I couldn't find them for my classroom either. And in some of the ways that I noticed some of my students' parents responding to me, that I didn't always feel welcomed or embraced. And it was later in life that I started learning more about the African diaspora's influence and presence throughout the Spanish-speaking world. And for whatever reason, it wasn't translating over into seeing bilingual books that were reflective of the presence of Blackness in the Spanish speaking world. And I got to a point where it started to bother me enough. And as I continued to move along in my career, in other ways, I finally reached a point and then with, meeting Rita and doing some work with her in different spaces, we decided to embark on this journey together to do something about it. Because you reach a point where it's, are you going to keep talking about something or are you going to do something? And yes. I think, Anthony, for me, I know you kind of mentioned, I don't know if you said the word haters or whatever, even the naysayers. I think you said naysayers. Yeah.
For me, haters too.
What I have noticed is I frankly don't care about what anybody who's sitting in the cheap seats has to say about what I'm doing out here in the arena. I'm really only interested in constructive feedback from someone else who's in the arena of life that's actively trying to build something, create something, do something, and they're doing the work. I am interested in feedback. Constructive criticism, yes, but only from fellow gladiators in the arena of life.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it.
If I had any one piece of what I believe is very good advice for anyone that's a part of the community that you are building and growing is to get to work. Whether that's go ahead and get to work, the work that needs to be done on yourself, go ahead and get to work on the work that needs to be done in terms of studying and acquiring greater level of proficiency in whatever language or languages you feel compelled to learn. Get to work. Oftentimes we don't realize how much time we spend in our heads thinking about things and then also thinking our way out of doing anything, always coming up with a reason why not to do the action rather than just start acting, start doing. And you will figure it out as you go along. That is very much what has happened with Rita and I as we started Tumbao Bilingual Books. It has very much been, how do we do this? Not quite sure, but what can we do? What do we have at hand right now?
And that what you can use.
That we can use to start making progress? You know, who do we know? Who can, what are the tools and how can we just start? And that's really the secret is there is no secret. It's in the doing.
Definitely to start where you are and use what you have to make the most of it. I love that so much. And that one part that you said, that was really something I was going to pick up. Cause I remember you said that last time in our conversation, something like, are you going to be the one, can you say it again? The one who
are you going to, yeah, you're going to actually, you know, be the one that's talking about the problem or are you actually going to step out there and try and do something about the problem that you keep talking about? You could certainly, and frankly, you know, to come full circle and go back to, it all starts with self. And started this conversation talking to me about wellness and how I combine or how I sort of embed personal wellness into the professional development I do for teachers. Mm-hmm. So you could really apply that same concept back to yourself. You know, when you look in the mirror, and not just the mirror of how you look physically, but when you look in the mirror truly of your soul and thinking about who you are as a person, if you don't like something that you see, are you just going to continue to kind of talk about it and think about it? Or are you going to step out and start acting to do something about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can take that same attitude and that approach and apply it to business, to teaching, to learning a language, and to learning yourself. You can take that same, are you gonna just keep talking or are you going to start doing?
Mm, I love it. It's speaking on the topic of language learning, what advice can you give for teachers, for educators who want to learn a language? Or, you know, there's a lot of teachers who have kids in their classroom who are who do speak a second language. For me, and I was teaching in San Antonio, so the population was Latino and Latina students. And so, I spoke Spanish, so I was able to communicate with them, but not all the teachers had that. And there, you know, I think as time goes by, years pass, Spanish is becoming more and more present, especially in the U.S. And so in the classroom, there are a lot of kids that speak Spanish, but not a lot of teachers that do. So what do you think, what kind of advice can you give in terms of language learning, and also maybe even how your books can help with that also?
I would suggest to model the learning process for your students, model the language learning process. It doesn't have to be a heavy lift. You can actually sort of incorporate, ask your students maybe to teach a word each week. There could be a couple of words each week. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you asked me this too, because we have two books coming out in early 2025. One of them is, I'm so excited about, it's primarily written in English, but it has some Spanish woven in. And it's inspired in part, this book was inspired in part by my role in helping organize the first Juneteenth celebration in the village of Crete, Illinois, where I'm a resident. And so it tells the story of a little girl from her perspective. Her name is Joy, and her grandmother's name is Joy as well. And then she has her other grandparents, her abuelitos, who are coming to also celebrate in the community with her for Juneteenth. So there's Spanish words woven into this story that is written primarily in English. And the title is, and you're the first to have it, We Celebrate Juneteenth Unidos. We Celebrate Juneteenth Unidos. Now, to answer your question about teachers, so the second book that we have coming out in early 2025 is 10 Estrategias Poderosas para Utilizar Libros Bilingües para Alcanzar la Alfabetización Bilingüe. It's going to be a bilingual book for teachers, 10 powerful strategies for using bilingual books to support biliteracy. And it's intended for all educators, not just teachers who are Spanish speaking. And so there's different strategies that all teachers could use as they are modeling for students how to really embrace being bilingual as a superpower. I would say one of the things that any teacher, regardless of if they speak Spanish or not, could do is they could encourage side-by-side reading. And bilingual books are perfect for that. So they can encourage their students to point out words that they recognize in one language that's similar to the other. They could also have them also point out differences between words by doing that side-by-side reading. You can also have students maybe use a bilingual book for their independent reading, and they could report back to you, the teacher, or to all of the class about different words that they saw that made them think about the words that they do know in another language, right? So along the way, you as a teacher, you're learning you're modeling how to be a lifelong learner. And you're also helping students to celebrate who they are in their entirety, that they don't have to leave a part of themselves at the classroom door just because you yourself as a teacher don't yet maybe speak the language that they speak fluently. So those are just a couple of ideas that are kind of fleshed out in more detail in the book that we have coming out on bilingual strategies. And again, I think the reason we're so excited about it is because oftentimes we have heard, Rita and I have both heard, like, oh, well, I don't speak Spanish. So as if that means that there's, as if it's almost like, okay, that seems to be very much fixed mindset. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's like you don't speak Spanish yet, right? When you add yet on it, that is actually leading by example, because you're showing your students, that's like if they arrived at your door and they're like, well, I don't know multiplication. Okay, that's why you're here at school, to learn. So as a teacher, I think that we need to do a little bit of a paradigm shift in our profession. And just because you've already graduated and you have your teaching certificate or teaching license, it doesn't mean that that's now, you know, the only learning that you've needed to do. You have to be able to, you have to be willing to be vulnerable with your students and model for them what it is to be a lifelong learner. And I think language is a perfect way to do that. Model for them and show them, you know, the process that you are going through trying to learn another language.
For sure. For sure. And I think also being candid and, like you said, being very vulnerable and admitting when you don't understand something, when you don't know something. For me, you know, I'm not a native Spanish speaker, but I did the work that required, that made me be a proficient bilingual speaker in Espanol. But there were some times, of course, where I would mess up or I would say a word that wasn't correct or something. And the kids, you know, one of the things that kids love to do is to call you out.
Oh, they love it.
And to prove you wrong. So they would do that. And then it's like on me, because it's like, okay, well, how is he going to take this? Is he going to be mad? Is the teacher going to get upset? And I'll be like, no, I'll be like, oh, okay, gracias. Oh, okay, no sabía. Oh, I didn't, mm-hmm. I didn't know. Okay, thank you. So how do you, so how do you say it? Oh, mm-hmm. this is how you say it in Mexico. Okay, mm-hmm. because I learned Spanish in Costa Rica, and this is how they say it here. Okay, cool. And then that creates a learning thing, and the kids from Mexico is like, oh, I didn't know that in Costa Rica they say this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know in Mexico they say this. You know, it creates a learning culture when you realize that as a teacher, you don't only teach kids, you also learn from them too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you're very much a facilitator in the classroom as much as you are a teacher. You know, you're also, you're all of the things, right? I feel like this conversation is coming full circle. You're talking about different hats that you wear as a teacher, right? But it always, in my experience, it's always going to circle back to self. And mm-hmm. what are you willing to do differently? How uncomfortable, because what you're going to notice, what I have noticed, I'll speak from what I have noticed, is that my growth is directly tied to how willing I am to be uncomfortable. Mm. So I can't expect huge amounts of growth personally in my business, in my relationships, if I'm not willing to get really uncomfortable, right? So you're willing to get a little uncomfortable, you can expect a little bit of growth. The more that you're willing to get uncomfortable and consistently over time, then the more growth you'll see. So this is going to be my last mention I make of running, Anthony. I told you I could talk about running a lot. Running taught me that. Mm-hmm. Running has taught me that over time, the more willing I am consistently day by day over time, the more willing I am to get uncomfortable, because running is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And the more frequently and consistently you're willing to get uncomfortable, that is how I was able to just pull out, you know, a first place in my age group at a 5K 2 days ago. I didn't get to decide last week that I wanted to be the fastest in my age group and then show up and do it. No. It doesn't work like that. Okay.
I sent you celebration emojis in the chat.
It doesn't work like that. You know, there's something that people say a lot. I don't know who to attribute the quote to, but a lot of times people say, don't be mad about the results you didn't get from the work you didn't do. Ooh. So, you know, you have to be willing to put in the work consistently over an extended period of time to expect to see huge amounts of growth. And I just think that that's a key piece that's missing, I think, from a lot of people's mindsets, is that they are wanting to see huge amounts of growth after, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks of fill in the blank, 2 weeks of going to the gym, 2 weeks of getting up early consistently and doing some type of meditative practice. I mean, that's not going to get it, people. You know, mm-hmm. and it's just sometimes people just really, you know, you just have to, I just want to be candid. Like, you can't expect to see these huge levels of growth in your personal life, your professional life, what have you, after a few little investments, mm-hmm. you know, over a short period of time. You're going to start to see the, you know, you can't expect a harvest on the day you plant the seeds. It's how willing are you to consistently continue planting seeds over an extended period of time in spite of lifing? Mm-hmm. Because life will continue to, like, people will get sick. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be people who you thought would support you and they don't end up supporting you. There's going to be people who don't follow through. Then there's going to be people who appear out of nowhere and they do more for you in terms of supporting what you're trying to achieve than somebody who you've known for 20 years. And these types of things, they're going to happen. And so are you able to continue to just keep planting those seeds and putting out that effort every day on a consistent basis? And running, I think, has just taught me that if I do that, just like I've seen huge returns on my investments as an athlete, as someone who's kind of, you know, really puts in a lot of effort to her personal physical fitness, I've seen the rewards. That gives me the faith to know that when I apply that same mindset in other areas of my life, I will see the rewards. And I am seeing the rewards. When mm-hmm. I think about where we are as a bilingual book company, in just a little over, not even a year and a half of being in existence, and when I think about the lives that we've gotten to touch, the children we've impacted, the spaces that we've been invited to.
Oh, I saw you. I'm sorry. I saw you. You spoke at a school or something, right? Did you?
Yes,
I saw that
just last week. Just mm-hmm. last week. Can I say the story of that was we didn't have a previous relationship with that. You know, I mean, we do have relationships with other principals and things of that nature because of the type of work we do in education, but not this particular principal at this particular school in that community. That was as a result of, you know, I talked about you can't expect to harvest on the day you plant the seeds. That was a result of me consistently and blindly in faith, walking in faith, sending out, and somebody said, well, do you know about marketing? No, but I could learn. Sending out personalized emails to school leaders all over blindly, right? Not school leaders that I had were in my network, that were in my personal professional network, and one responded. And not only responded enthusiastically, responded in such a way that wanted her parents and her school community to place pre-orders of the book before Ooh. We even arrived. Okay.
Love that.
So none of that, what you just saw, the beautiful, I think you're referring to the post I put out, the beautiful pictures, all of those children in that audience that received the book, that also were impacted by what Rita and I shared about Gustavo's story and how important it is to show empathy to all children, especially children that are newcomers, and make them feel welcome. None of that would have happened had it not been for us consistently over time, without a guarantee of anyone necessarily responding, but we just consistently kept doing the work. So oftentimes people see the end result. They'll see mm-hmm. the beautiful pictures. Oh my goodness, you know, this beautiful book and you sold all these books, but they don't see all of the late nights, early mornings, the emails mm-hmm. that you're sending, the phone calls you're making, the places that you're showing up to with no promise of a return on that investment of your time and energy.
Oh, yeah. The
I like to call them the redirections, because I've been redirected and rerouted all over.
I love it.
And just knowing that's a part of it. That is a part mm-hmm. of the process. And in the more that you try and avoid rejection and avoid getting your feelings hurt and avoid having somebody say no to you, then the longer it's going to take. Okay. Mm. The faster that you can get over, oh, okay, that's not for them. Okay. They don't like me. Okay. You know, that the faster that you can get over that, then that the quicker that you will get to the people that are meant to cross paths with you. You cannot be afraid. You cannot be afraid of I'm not going to say rejection. You cannot be afraid of those redirections. You cannot be afraid of it. And one of the things that, you know, is really important to remember is that I tell myself this. I just created a post on my own personal Instagram about this like a day ago. The story of my life is not going to be just written with the words and the things that are going on in my head. The story of my life is going to be written by my actions. So what am I doing? Mm. Day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, what am I actually doing? Because the story of my life is going to be written by my actions, not by thoughts I had and dreams that stayed in my head and never actually materialized into me actually doing any work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I just, the true story about me is that I really did used to care an awful lot about what people thought about me until one day I tried to pay my bills with their opinions.
Oh, and it didn't work.
Mm-mm. it's not they don't accept those kinds of deposits in the
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So on the same subject with challenges, I want to know, and your role as a person who facilitates professional development for teachers, and I'm sure you've worked with a lot of teachers and educators of color in general, what kind of challenges have you came to see that they face when it comes to PD and wellness practices and different things inside the classroom, outside the classroom, as it pertains to educators of color?
One of the things that I've noticed is that when we have conversations around culturally responsive pedagogy, culturally responsive practices, when we ever engage in conversations about relationships with students and bias, I have noticed And I have lived it. I've lived it as an educator, and I continue to notice it as someone who provides professional development. It seems to me that educators of color are expected to lead these conversations and lead that work that needs to be done in terms of improving our understandings of serving diverse children with diverse needs that come from a variety of different backgrounds. And I would say that that is a real challenge that I've noticed that educators of color have to face, especially if they are a part of a faculty or in a school where there are maybe only a few educators of color. That feels, it can be exhausting. And then I have offline conversations with them before or after the PD about how tiring that is, and that it seems like just extra layers of, I don't want to use the word, I'm looking for another word to use. There's a word I don't want to use because it's being overused, to maybe misused, but it certainly isn't helpful in terms of burnout and compassion fatigue. I don't want to misuse the word trauma, but I do think it is fair to say that many educators of color have been traumatized in certain instances when they are asked to lead professional development on topics that around cultural competency, when in fact, it's almost as though just because of the fact they're an educator of color, it is assumed that they are an expert or should be an expert in leading those conversations.
I feel like that in the same breath, I think for me, and when it comes to being a Black Spanish teacher, I've found myself having to prove myself a lot in a lot of situations, and being a lot of things that were expected of me past the norm, you know. I don't know if you have you been in situations like that where you feel like you had to really prove yourself because they, I don't know, for me, when I talk to people sometimes, and they figure out that I speak Spanish. This is even outside of education.
Hablas español. ¿Cómo sabes español? ¿Cómo hablas español? Yeah, I see.
It's such a surprise. It's like, oh, yeah. Oh.
And I've now reached the point where I'm like, ay, qué sorpresota, ¿verdad? No, pero la verdad es que no debería ser una sorpresota porque hay tantos hispanohablantes que son de todos los colores. O sea, a lo mejor usted no viaja o qué?
I see. O también algunas personas dicen, oh, ¿hablas un poco? Y yo digo, no, hablo más que un poco.
Hablo bien. Con fluidez. Oh, de hecho, soy docente, soy profesor de español, de hecho.
No,
so, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow, oh my gosh, you're so cute, I didn't know. Well, yeah.
Or then they want to know where you're from, and then where are your parents from? Yes. Where are you from? Right.
Oh, no, I remember telling people, like, no, yeah, I'm Black. Oh, well, where are your parents from? Oh, yeah, oh, they're from Atlanta, from North Carolina. Oh, well, your grandparents. Yeah, well, where are your grandparents? Oh, well, they're also from North Carolina, too. Yeah, no one in my family is Hispanic. Oh, and it's such a shock. It's such a, like, you know, and part of the work that I'm doing, part of the narrative that I'm trying to change is that you can be a person who is Black, who does not come from a Hispanic background, and you can speak Spanish. And it can be the norm. It can be okay. That's part of the work that I'm doing because that is my lived experience.
Yes,
in being in a lot of spaces like that.
You can learn. And it wasn't always comfortable for me as a learner. While I was learning Spanish, I oftentimes, when I was studying abroad, I had beautiful experiences. And I also had some ugly experiences abroad, kind of like life. Right? Kind of like life even in the United States. So I've had beautiful experiences as an American citizen, in the United States, and I've had ugly experiences. The same can be, I can say the same has been my lived experience as somebody who's traveled to multiple countries. As a Black woman, I've had beautiful, life-enriching, soul-enriching experiences, and I've also had ugly experiences.
I think to some people that they want to travel abroad, they want to go, they want to travel, but they know it can be a fun experience, they know it can be beautiful, but like you said, like there's also a part of like, well, what if I go to Mexico and they don't like Black people? what if I go to this country and they don't like Black people? And I see stuff on Instagram and stuff, and I don't know, I'm just a little scared. And so they stay in the US, they stay in their box. What do they do? What could you say to that?
I would say do it anyway.
Book the flight.
There, of course, so it is true. It is true. You can go there and you might have some encounters mm-hmm. that are painful or uncomfortable or frankly racist. You may. It may mm-hmm. happen. Just like that may happen if you go to Walmart right now.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's not going to stop you, is it? You're still going to go and do mm-hmm. your shopping. So why would you give your power away like that? Do it anyway. Ooh. Because you could also have some amazing soul-enriching experiences as well. It's all possible. It's mm-hmm. all possible. And so what I would say is do it anyway. I don't have any regrets. I'm happy to have had all of the full, right? I'm not here. I don't believe that I exist on this planet right now to only have beautiful experiences. I believe I'm here to have a full range of the human experience. And part of that is sometimes ugly and dark, and sometimes it's light and beautiful. And so I think travel and traveling to all, you know, to the far reaching ends of the earth, wherever your soul is calling you to journey to, then you need to journey there. You can be fearful while still doing it. I mean, I said several minutes ago, like oftentimes while I'm engaged in doing something, it could even be this conversation with you, I may feel tired, but I'm still doing it anyway. I may feel scared, but I'm still doing it anyway. So please extend that to your desire to go journey abroad. As a Black educator, as a Black person, don't allow that to dissuade you from your heart's desire.
Ooh, I think it's also what we said earlier. And side note, I love how this conversation is grounded in wellness and like self-care and stuff like that. That's amazing because I'm in therapy. But I think it goes back to what you said about what you say to yourself. Are you telling yourself that you cannot go travel abroad? Are you telling yourself that you're going to have a bad experience? It's not going to work out. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because that might not be the reality of it, right? That might not be what actually happens. You could go abroad and it could change your life. Because that's what happened for me when I was in 2018 in Costa Rica. And now I'm living in Paris. Like,
exactly. You know, exactly.
I really encourage people to book the flight.
Because what if it book the flight? What if it all works out? What if it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. And I don't know if I shared this with you, but you asked me about just my experience as a Black language educator, bilingual educator. My very first job interview, I'm not sure if I shared this with you. It was my very first job interview. I was interviewing to be a Spanish bilingual classroom teacher. And the two administrators who were interviewing me, they asked me, during the middle of the interview, they actually told me that they were going to ask me something that they hadn't asked any of the other candidates. They wanted me to respond to a question in Spanish. That's mm-hmm. perfectly acceptable. And in fact, that should be protocol. You should, of course, ask a candidate who's going to be teaching in that language to respond to an interview question in that language. The problem is that they didn't ask any of the other candidates to do that. They only asked me. And mm-hmm. it probably won't come as any surprise to you or anyone in your community that I was the only Black candidate for a class bilingual Spanish classroom teaching position. And I was the only one that was asked to respond in Spanish. And, y pues claro que sí, lo hice. Contesté la pregunta en español. No sé, ni siquiera recuerdo lo que me preguntaron. Me preguntaron algo acerca de alguna estrategia de lectura o algo que haría con los estudiantes. Algo apropiado, completamente 100% apropiado para preguntar. Pero después mm-hmm. de contestar la pregunta en español, el uno se dio vuelta y miró al otro y dijo, wow, her English is so good too.
Ooh.
And that for me was my introduction into the formal career as a bilingual teacher. And I believe that every experience I had after that in the bilingual education space has definitely informed where I am now to be a co-owner of Tumbao Bilingual Books that's trying to change the narrative, as you say. We are expanding to be more inclusive of multi-ethnic and multilingual families, for them to see themselves in Spanish English bilingual books. But that was my first experience.
Oh, I love it. I love it. What role do you see bilingualism playing in today's educational landscape? And I mentioned before that Spanish is on the rise, is increasing. I saw a survey that in 2050, Spanish is going to be like almost equal, or if not more, than the language spoken in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
What do you see like bilingualism in today's educational landscape, with the children coming in and growing up and between students, and the need for educators, especially educators of color, to want to learn another language?
So we want to be a part of the story, for sure. We're going to be a part of the story. As more and more Black educators choose to learn another language, be it Spanish or any other language, then we can ensure that we are a part of what education looks like for multilingual students, bilingual students. It's only going to increase. I mean, even just looking at what our Secretary of Education right now in the United States is saying about raising the bar, and that multilingualism is about raising the bar for all students. Mm-hmm. And that is the direction that I foresee all of our students heading in. And so it's going to be really important for educators of color to be a part of that, because I don't want the story I shared with you about that interview experience I had. That is not okay.
Right.
That wasn't okay. Nothing about that was okay. And I don't want it to be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think part of that experience that I had, that maybe is why there are so few Black educators that are choosing to go into language education, choosing to go into that bilingual space or that world language space, but they're growing. And so I predict that it's going to continue to increase. I feel like a part of what you're doing with the type of safe communities that you're building, I think it can be that safe space for educators to kind of come to and feel safe and talk about their shared experiences and also brainstorm on how to move the work forward.
Oh yes, and to change the narrative. That's my thing. That's what I'm trying to do.
That's even one of the things that's part of the reason I'm so excited about We Celebrate Juneteenth Unidos. I think We Celebrate Juneteenth Unidos, for me, it is a response to a question of, can we build bridges and can we celebrate this federal holiday in a way that is unifying? And that for me, are releasing We Celebrate Juneteenth Unidos with Joy's beautiful multi-ethnic, multilingual family, with her abuelitos and her Black grandparent and her mother, who is, you know, who's obviously, you'll see in the illustrations, her mother is Black, her father is Hispanic, and seeing how all of them celebrate Juneteenth Unidos. That's the type of contribution that I want to make to what you're saying, is that we're seeing the number of multilingual students and blended families increase. We need to have books and literature that reflects the reality of students who come to school, and they are a part of multi-ethnic families, and they deserve to see their stories in books. They deserve to see families that are colorful just like theirs. Mm-hmm. In the books that their teachers read.
Because representation matters so much.
It does.
So where can our listeners learn more about your work, Tumbao Bilingual Books, and where can they get access to the resources that you provide?
The best way to find us is our website, tumbaobooks.com. Tumbaobooks.com.
Okay.
That's the best way. That's the best way to connect. We're on. You can also connect with us on Instagram. Super easy to find us. Tumbao Bilingual Books.
Okay. Love it. Well, thank you so much, Valerie. This has been a pleasure.
Yes. Thank you, Anthony.
Muchas gracias. Muchísimas gracias.
Gracias a ti. Gracias a ti. Merci. Oui,
oui. Merci.
Merci. Merci. Oui.
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 Let me stop.
Let you stop. Oh my goodness, that was wonderful. That was fun.